So tonight we will be continuing what I did originally call a short series. I'm not sure how long it's been now. Maybe you've even forgot this series has been going on because we've had a bit of a break. But we're continuing tonight. We're near the end of this short section of the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus preaches, which is known as the Sermon on the Mount. And we've called the title of this whole series essentially, "What is a Christian?" That's been the big question that Jesus has been answering here. And why is this the big question? Well, this is a significant moment in history. This, when we get to chapter 5 of Matthew's Gospel, it's big enough that God has come to earth as a man, Jesus Christ. But here we're learning, when we get to chapter 4 and 5 of Matthew's Gospel, we're learning what he brought with him when he came to earth. He literally brought heaven with him. That's what we've learned. When Jesus begins his ministry, he says, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." It's at hand. It's near you. Heaven is near you when Christ is near you. So he brought heaven with him. And what's heaven like? Well, we've been learning it in these verses. So week by week, we've been hearing Jesus say, "Blessed." That's the first word you hear when you think of heaven. What's the first word that should come to your mind? Blessed. Blessed means this divine sense of happiness which cannot be taken away by the world. It's not dependent on things around you. This deep sense of joy and happiness found in heaven. But then we discover why. Jesus gives many reasons. They will be comforted by God himself. They shall inherit the whole earth. Inherit. They shall be satisfied. Depth of your soul, satisfied. I could go on and go on and go on. That is what Jesus brought with him and has begun now. Now, what he's doing is he's inviting people in. So when he comes and he says, "Repent," he's essentially saying, turn your back on this kingdom that you're used to, the kingdom of this world, and enter into this new kingdom. So there's change. And he's invited people. And in Matthew chapter 4, the disciples have been doing that. He's called the first disciples. They leave everything and they follow him. They're in heaven now. Heaven's here. They're in the kingdom of heaven. And every Christian has done the same thing. So as I look out at you tonight, there are some of you sitting in the kingdom of heaven tonight. And some of you are outside still. And why this is so important is because everything that I just said that's true of heaven, the exact opposite is true if you're sitting in the kingdom of this world. So instead of blessed, there's cursed. Instead of comfort, there is eternal, what's the opposite of comfort? Turmoil, abandonment. It's all the opposite, and it's forever. So just as the Christian is in it now, and it's only going to stretch on forever when it comes fully at the end, the same is true of those who are outside. That's what Jesus is teaching here. So just imagine, I don't know if this is going to help. I know Gerard's used these illustrations before. Imagine this is split in two, this room, and there's two realms running together. That's the point here. So heaven's come now. So half of this place is heaven. Half of this place is the world. How would we shuffle ourselves? That's the question. How would you shuffle yourselves? How would you know if you're in heaven? How would you know? Essentially, how would you know if you're a Christian? Because that's what it comes down to. Now, when I used to go to Aberystwyth for a Christian conference, Aberystwyth is a tiny town. But when this Christian conference is on at a university, Christians embark on this poor small town and it gets invaded by Christians. So for the first time, I would be walking around the town thinking, it's quite likely these people are Christians. But then I'd play a little game in my head. How would I know? What would be the giveaway that maybe they have a bottle of Schlur in their hands, or a quiche as well. They had a quiche in this hand. They've got cake somewhere, because there's always got to be cake. Maybe there's socks and sandals. I don't know. Maybe it would come down to fashion. But on a serious note, what would be the dividing line? How would you gather the Christians here to know, right, these people are in the kingdom of heaven? That's what Jesus is dealing with in the Beatitudes. So every descriptive word that he uses, he doesn't say, "Blessed are my disciples." He could have said that, because it's true. But he's using descriptive words. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. So you have little things to look for. Ah, okay, the Christian is poor in spirit. And we've been doing that. We've been looking through each of those every week. And I hope one thing that stood out, if you've sat in these studies or sermons, I hope it stood out that the Christian is utterly different. So however wide this is, it is so far apart, the difference. When you look at it in this way, on the face of it, we all seem the same, maybe. Maybe even some of you are saying, yeah, I think I'm a Christian. I've said a prayer. I read my Bible. I go to church. But when you define it in this way that Jesus is doing, that's where you discover. So it's kind of like a filtering, you could say. He's filtering the crowd. That's why these Beatitudes are so challenging. They're full of comfort for those who are in the kingdom, but it's a filtering system. Has God done a work in me? Because essentially, I suppose, the thing that the Beatitudes scream out, these verses, is a Christian is born again. Maybe that's the key thing that you discover as you go through these things, is a Christian is utterly changed. And we're going to see that more tonight. We reach a climax, actually, tonight, so that you could call this a climactic point. Verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Now, I say it's a climactic point. It's not the end, so we're still to reach verse 10. Blessed are those who are persecuted. But it's a climactic point in the sense that it's the last positive descriptive word of a Christian. So he goes on to persecuted after that, which is more something that happens to a Christian. But this is the last thing he wants you to know about what a Christian is like. So you could say almost like it completes the profile of a Christian. And it's so interesting. Peacemaker. Is that what you would have chosen as the closing descriptive word for a Christian? Peacemaker. I think it's got to be a climactic point, because peace is probably, apart from happiness, the thing that we want the most. I think if we asked most people, what do you want in life? There would be happiness, but there would also be some sort of word like peace or contentment. So it's important. But the idea of making peace, peacemaker, that's so, I mean, take our world today. Isn't the hot topic today war? Protest about war. Have you seen it in central London? Protests going on about war in this world, Ukraine. We've been praying about it in the prayer tonight. Maybe in your own life, personal peace. Maybe there's no moment of peace for you. You're sitting alone in your living room. You should be at peace. There's nothing wrong. You've got everything you need. You've got food. You've got friends. You've got family. But there's no peace. There's turmoil. That's what we're dealing with tonight, with this one word, peacemaker. So it's a huge thing to end on. And this is saying that the Christian alone is the peacemaker. It's saying that the Christian is the answer to the peace problem in this world. That would be laughable today on the news. We need peace. We need peace. Oh, it's the Christians that are the answer. The Christians. That's what is being said here. So we need to ask some questions, as we've been doing in every sermon. There's going to be four questions tonight. The first question is, why is the Christian alone a peacemaker? Why them? Why are they the great answer to this peace problem? And to do that, I'm just going to ask some questions about peace. So what is peace? If I was to get you to think in your head a definition of peace, what would you say? Have a little think. Don't worry, this isn't going to be an interactive time. I'm not going to get you to share. I just wanted a drink, basically. What is peace? I'm sure you would have said something to do with serene or calmness, maybe. Or if you're thinking in terms of peace between people, you might have thought in terms of an absence of hostility or fighting. So you might have been thinking along those lines. And they do capture something of peace. But in the Bible, it's much, much more than that. In the Bible, peace is not just not fighting. It's not just not arguing. Peace means wholeness, completeness. So imagine it's not just two people living separately and they're not arguing anymore. It's actually bringing those two people together as friends and they actually love each other. That's the Bible's description of peace. When you apply it to personal peace, it's saying you being whole. It's giving you a clue as to why we don't feel peace. It's saying that we're not whole. We're broken. There's division within me. There's division outside of me. As we're going to see, there's another division going on that's even greater, that's the root issue. But for now, I think it's just important to think that if that's what Jesus is talking about here, we're in a whole other realm to this world's pursuit of peace. We're in a whole other realm. We've entered a whole other place. Because this is not just living nice, quiet lives away from your neighbours and you secretly hate them. Or you have a nice day because you didn't argue with your colleagues, but deep down you all resent each other. This is not that. This is you as one, genuinely brought together like a big hug, and you're both wanting to be together, and it's beautiful. That's the idea of peace. So, next question, why do we long for peace so much? Why is it probably the most sought after thing in our world? Well, again, the Bible gives a unique answer. The God who made us is a God of peace. And it's shown maybe clearest in the fact that he is Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Three persons, distinct, but one God. Do you see that? So that description I just had of peace, isn't that a perfect picture of peace? Eternally, three persons, one God, perfectly loving one another eternally. Nothing between them. No divisions. They're distinct but not divided. That's peace. That's God at the core of his being. And we are made in his image. That's why God said to Adam, it's not good that he should be alone. Because he's made in the image of God, who is free but one. And Adam was just there as one. So he makes Eve. And they're meant to be one together, one flesh. And then they produce a child. And it's meant to be one family. Then anyway, we go on. Do you see the picture? And that's why peace matters so much to us, because we were made for it. We were made to be whole within, whole with each other, and whole with God. That's why our buzzword today is unity, unity, unity. Have you noticed the big movement of today is to unite everyone? That's what they want. Everyone united. It doesn't matter what you believe, what you think. We're just one. We're one. That's what the world wants. But in a sense, we were made for that. So I'm not surprised they're chasing after that. They're just going about it completely the wrong way, as we're going to see. So that's why we long for peace so much. I just want to say another thing on that. It's where we began. So picture Eden, that garden. I'm sure you know the story. Adam and Eve with God. That was a place of perfect peace. They had perfect peace with God because they walked with God. I love that picture. It's saying they walked in full agreement with each other. Imagine walking with God every day, telling him how your day went. There's nothing to hide. He loves you. You love him. There's no shame. There's nothing in between you. There's no barrier. There's no hostility. There's no fear. That's what they had at the beginning. And then they had it with each other. And I love it in that phrase, naked, not ashamed. You might think, well, what's that got to do with peace? This is talking about naked. Naked is not just no clothes in this sense. Naked is that they had nothing between them, nothing to hide. Adam didn't think bad thoughts of Eve one day. They never lied to each other. They loved each other perfectly, and they never had to worry what the other partner was thinking. Their love was so evident. There was no barrier. It must have been, I can't imagine it. There was no fear of that person hurting you. It wasn't even conceived of. And they were then whole within as well. Imagine how that would have been. You were just whole. Whole with God. Whole with each other. Whole within. That's where we began as a humanity. But that's obviously not our experience today. And I don't have to spend too long tonight to try and convince you of that, I'm sure. Just look around at our world. And you could ask the question, where's peace? Where is it? All you see is division. We could just name some stuff. Nations and races. People say today, I can't believe it's the 21st century and racism still exists. They're surprised. It shouldn't be this way, they say. But we can't get rid of it. Look in the streets. Look lower level, streets. There's gang violence, knife crime, robberies. Then go to the playground. Even in our child years, where we're innocent, there's bullying, there's cliques, there's speaking behind people's backs, even in the playground, even in the workplace. I go to work to get my job done, and there's politics at work, they say. The boss is abusing the staff are speaking behind the boss's back. There's hostility in the air between the staff. This person did that to that person, and now they're not talking. Can anyone relate to that? Then there's, you'd think maybe in the home you'd find it at least. Oh, I chose to be with this person forever. Hopefully it would happen there. I chose them, they chose me. No, divorce rates. Domestic violence rose dramatically in COVID. You'd think if we were shut in our homes together, violence might decrease. There was a huge problem with domestic violence during lockdown. Families, sons and daughters with their parents breaking off. It's all over the place. And then within, let alone within. I find it amazing to think that, I've said this before, why can't we just sit in silence and be relaxed? Why can't I do that? Why do I always have to have some sort of device distracting me? Why can't I just be whole and sit? I'm not talking about Eastern meditation here. Just talking about enjoying the moment for a minute. No peace. I hope I've proven the point. So another big question, obviously, is why don't we have peace? Why is it this way? What happened? Again, there will be many answers today in our world. We need education. We need to get rid of religion. That's the problem. You name it. The Bible's answer is very simple. It's the word sin. Now, you might think, what does sin have to do with peace? What's the relation? Well, remember what we said earlier. Peace is wholeness, right? Peace is you whole or one with God. That's what we were made for. Sin is the very opposite. Sin, by definition, is rebelling against God. So I used to walk with God in peace. Now I'm not just going that way a little bit. I'm completely turning my back on him and going that way. So do you see how it relates? How can there be peace when there's sin? Because as long as sin remains, God is here, I'm here. That's why the minute Adam and Eve sinned, what happened? They ran and hid. They didn't walk with God that day. They hid in the garden. And then what did he do? He sent them out. So it's a double separation. They're running away and he's sending them away. And then it's not even just separation. There's war. There's literally war. They're afraid of God as if he's an enemy come to get them. That's what happens when they hide. And look at us today. Our world is like this. How dare God tell me what to do? Stephen Fry, how dare God have babies with cancer? That's what Stephen Fry says. There's anger. There's anger from the human side. I don't even want him to tell me what to do, let alone try and follow what he does tell me to do. But then there's anger from God's side. He is holy and he is against evil. So there is destruction coming our way as long as this remains. So it's serious. There's hell, eternal anger from God, we read in the Bible. So do you see how serious this is? And the point here is very simple. The reason why there's no peace in your life, the reason why there's no peace in this world is a vertical issue. Yes, it works itself out horizontally and it works itself out internally, but the problem is here. And that's why we, our world, can't make peace. because we keep looking horizontally to fix it. It reminds me of knife crime charities. I don't know if you've seen them on the streets. I'm probably very annoying to them because sometimes when they stop me, I say, honestly, it's a very good work you're doing. I really do think it's a great work that they're doing. They're trying to stop knife crime in London. But I say to them, as long as people don't find Christ, as long as these people involved in this life don't find this kind of peace, as long as there's not a great turn into Christ among young people in London, knife crime will continue. Wars will continue. It's only when you find peace with Christ that everything else starts to change. So we're looking in the wrong place. But here's the thing. Even when you start to realize that it's a vertical issue, we still can't fix it. Because Jesus says sin, as long as sin is there, there's no peace. There cannot be. But then, okay, can I get rid of sin? No. Because Jesus says, out of the heart comes sin. He gives a long list of things that proceed from the heart. Sexual morality, theft, murder, anger. And surely they're war-making things, aren't they? So as long as these things are spewing out of me, there can be no peace anywhere else. There can be no peace in me. So the picture's been painted, I hope. If we're remembering our little two kingdoms, let's say this is the kingdom of the world. There can be no peace as long as you stay in here, basically, is the point. There cannot be. There's no way. And it's serious, because it means everyone who stays outside of the kingdom of heaven, who does not come to Christ, there's only one outcome. Hell. But Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. What he's saying here is the Christian began here, but they crossed over to here. They were just like everyone else, but they somehow made it in here. This is God's home. So they found peace with God. And as you look at them, I hope you've found this in your life. What do you find when you look at Christians? If there's anyone here who has grown up in a Christian home, or at least maybe if you don't believe it yourself, do you at least see there's something different with Christians? When I first came into this church 10 years ago, or I don't know, maybe it's more now, I was struck by this unity in this church. And they had something I didn't have. They enjoyed speaking with each other. And look out at the different faces, all the ages, the races. And they actually, I speak to people now that I would never have spoken to before. I would never have had anything to do with them. And they wouldn't have had anything to do with me. So it's even true as you look at the Christians. You see, wow, they've got peace. In Matthew's gospel, as you go through, you're going to find a list of disciples or 12 apostles. Within that list, you find a tax collector and a zealot. They would have been utterly opposed. But then Christ comes along and they're spending all the time together as apostles together. It's a picture of what Jesus does. Jews and Gentiles, slave and free, as we've heard this morning. Whoever you are this tonight, if you're a Christian, you're one with other Christians. It's a beautiful thing. And I hope you've noticed as you've looked at Christians, they've got peace within as well. They haven't just got peace with one another and with God. They're actually quite content in life. Have you noticed that? More than that, they're now looking over to this side and they're thinking, oh, if only they found this. And they're sharing the gospel. They're telling other people about how they can find peace with God as well. They've become peacemakers. They really have. They're peacemakers with each other. They're quick to apologize. I've seen that. I have to say, I have seen that. I wish I saw it more in my own life, but I have seen the change that God does in Christians, and maybe you have too. So the Christian is a peacemaker in a unique way. But next question, how? How did the Christian become a peacemaker? This is so important. This bit is the point of the verse, I would say. Let's read the verse again. Verse 9 of chapter 5. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Do you know what that's saying? When you look at the Christian and you see they're a peacemaker, the conclusion you're supposed to come to when you read this verse is, ah, they're sons of God. Now, why was that word sons used? Is it kind of like males only? Like, let's separate the females. The reason why that one of the main reasons why that word son is used is because it's speaking of likeness. You know the phrase, like father, like son. So it's saying, when you're looking at a Christian, you're supposed to come to the conclusion, they're just like their father. Just like their father. So do you see the headline of this verse? It's saying, a Christian is a peacemaker because that's who God is. That's the point. And just read the Bible for yourself and it will be all over. I would argue it's the main point of the Bible. One of the main points. God is a peacemaker. It's the whole gospel. It's the central point of the gospel. God makes peace. It's who he is. You see it even in Genesis 3. What are Adam and Eve doing? They started the war. They run away. God comes to them. Where are you? He says. He's peacemaking. He's coming to them. He's offering them peace. And they still blame each other. They still don't yield to his offer. So then he makes them a promise of peace. And he covers them in animal skins. He's always been a peacemaker. This is good news. But there's more. Do you notice it says they shall be called sons? Two chapters earlier in Matthew, or sorry, three chapters earlier, Jesus is called the Son. So it's like our minds are being drawn to Jesus. And in Matthew chapter 3, Jesus has his baptism. And the Father says, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. The Father calls Jesus his own Son. You seen the link with this verse? They shall be called sons of God. They're like Jesus, the only Son. They're like him. How is Jesus a peacemaker? Please listen to this. If you know this well, listen to it with new ears because it is the wonderful message of the gospel. How is Jesus a peacemaker? Let's see what he did. Jesus was in heaven with his Father and he was in perfect peace. Ah, perfect love. What Adam and Eve tasted in the beginning. But he looks down at a broken, divided world that is bent on shaking their fist at God and making things worse. What does he do? He does what a peacemaker does. He doesn't look and say, how dare they? I'm going to destroy them. He doesn't look and say, I'm just going to ignore them because I'm going to enjoy my perfect peace over here. No, he leaves his peace, comes to earth, and he enters enemy territory and he walks this earth. And when you look at his life in the Gospels, what does he do? He makes peace. He's promising people rest for their souls. He heals people. He joins enemies together. But he came to deal with the root. Remember, the root was vertical. He came to deal with the root, the problem with man and God. How does he do it? Well, he, the innocent one who had no sin, remember, sin was the problem. What does he do? He enters right in the middle of the war field. He hangs on a cross and he has his arms open. Peacemaker. The cross hangs between heaven and earth. He's in the middle. And he takes blows and hostility from both sides. Man did their worst to Christ that anyone ever experienced. The only innocent, mocked, spat on, bruised. No one showed him not one ounce of pity. And then the Father at the same time was pouring out his anger at the sins of those, like those ones who were nailing him to the tree. Can you imagine it? From both sides, no pity. This is what he's suffering as a peacemaker. And he endures it all. He takes the very sins that separated us from God and endures it all at the cross. and he's broken, turmoil, so that people like me and you can have true peace with God. So that there can be nothing between you and God. Imagine that. Nothing between you and God. Walking with him every day of your life, like Adam and Eve did in the garden. Nothing to hide. You can tell him everything because Christ took it all at the cross. Even if you sin today and you sin tomorrow, you tell him again. And Christ took that because by his blood, we have found peace. Do you see the point? He did it all. He's the greatest peacemaker. He's like a great big embrace. He's got us and the Father, and he's gone like that. And no one can separate that. Do you see? Do you see how good news this is for the broken world in which we live? This is the only answer. Christians, you have the only answer for this broken world desperate for peace. But tonight, if you're sitting there and you have not discovered this peace with God, then please hear this verse and know that Christ is the peacemaker who is calling you to this peace. He's done everything. And every time you see a Christian change today, it's saying the same truth to you. Christ is a peacemaker. Every time you see a Saul changed to Paul, it's saying Christ is a peacemaker. Every time you see a Joe who lived a different life to what he lives now, it's saying Christ is a peacemaker. Every time you see Christians who are strangely united with all their differences, it's saying Christ is a peacemaker. God wants you to know Christ can bring you peace. Christ can make you whole if only you will lay down your weapons, no more sin, and call on him, the Prince of Peace. Lord, please forgive me. I've done nothing to deserve this. I'm a sinner, but I've heard tonight about how you took the sins that made me deserve hell. And I want forgiveness. Please give me peace. And Christ will come and he will give you peace. That is what is on offer. Now, we could stop there, but I think there's other things to say here. So before, we won't take too long for this last bit, but there's something else. One of the main points of the Beatitudes is to speak to the Christian. And it's very simple. Christian, if you have received this peace that we've been talking about, if you have met the peacemaker and know him, you must expect to be a peacemaker too. You must. This verse is saying it is the very evidence that you have become a Christian. Because it says, for they shall be called sons of God. They and they alone. So the big challenge to us today is, are you a peacemaker? That will be the evidence that you have found peace with God. That will be the evidence that you've met with Christ. There's many evidences, but this verse highlights that as a key one. So the Lord, well, third question. Why must a Christian be a peacemaker? Why is it so important? Well, simply, we could just say this. After everything I've just said tonight, how could we not be? Firstly, it should be inevitable. Think of the truth that I was once an enemy of God, wanting nothing to do with him, and Christ did all of that for me that I've just described. Why would I then retain this peace? Why would I not want to shout and tell everyone? Why would I not want to be the first to apologize for any wrong that I've done when God forgave me so freely? Do you see how it relates? How can I, who found such gentleness and grace from the one I wronged, withhold it from others? How can I, who found such wholeness and peace in Christ, not at least long for the same for others? It's got to be evident. I've got to long for it, if there's anything that's happened to me. But secondly, not just inevitable, it should be natural now. I think that's one of the main points here. We were like the world before. All we did was divide. It was all about me, me, me. But this verse is saying, you have been born again. You are like God now. you're like him. And every family has a standout trait. So I was thinking, if I had kids, what would be the standout trait of my kids? Maybe it would be the eyebrows. Probably be some standout eyebrows in my children. Or maybe it would be humor. I'm not sure. But every family has a standout trait. What's your standout trait for your family? What's the first thing people see when they see you? Like, ah, oh, they're a Hemmings. Or what would be the thing? Well, the amazing thing is the standout trait for God's family is peacemaker. Isn't that an amazing thing? The standout trait that God wants people to see about him is he is a peacemaker. It's the heart of the gospel. It's what the whole Bible's about, how God makes peace between people who hate him and him. It's a beautiful thing. So the big point tonight is this. Being a peacemaker is the key evidence that you've come to know God, or one of them, that you have received his peace. So the challenge for us tonight is, final question, are you a peacemaker? It will say everything about what you've experienced with God. And how do you know? Look at Jesus, the peacemaker. We looked at it a little bit this morning, but just some things to mention, just to help you. Am I a peacemaker? How do I know? Think about some of the things that Christ did. Looked at how he grieved over division. Now notice this, with Christ there was division. So this isn't just peace for everyone, no matter what you believe. Because Christ was pure, there was division. So we must clarify that. There has to be purity. This isn't just peace at any price. Just whatever you believe, oh, let's just be one. No. But he grieved over division. He was mourning over it. He wept over people that were going to reject him. Am I at least moved for the broken society in which I live? Am I moved over the state of what you could say is a broken church in many ways? The fighting over this and all these side issues. Am I moved by it? Or am I just oh, whatever, that's them. Or maybe I secretly quite like it. We're this faction, and that's that faction, and look at us, we're great. We should be mourning over the divisions, not just in the church, but in the world. We should. Does that reflect you? Look at him going to such lengths to achieve peace, all the way to the cross. How far do I go to achieve peace for anyone? Again, look at him refusing to settle for false peace. I think that's important. Pure in heart comes before peacemaker. So we must stand for the truth. And there will be division, sadly. If you're looking to achieve a pure peace, a gospel peace, you will be persecuted. That's why the very next verse is, blessed are those who are persecuted, which we're going to look at next time. So are you willing to face pain to achieve peace, pure peace? Are you willing to be rejected by friends to achieve it? I've got issues within my family. I'm sure many of you have experienced that division over these things. Look at him remaining silent when accused, facing the greatest injustice. How do we respond when we're wronged? I think a great test for this, just to test how well you respond to being wronged. I think look at you in the car driving. If you drive, maybe if you're on a bike, if some of you go biking around, that's when the real me comes out, because I'm in a nice little safe bubble. I can get as angry as I want and I'm safe. I can drive off. So that's when you'll find what you're really like, when someone cuts you up or slows you down. Just have a little think about how you respond when you're wronged. There's more, but I think one I'll end on is, look at his chief concern. This is Christ. Look at his chief concern for the world to know the peace of God. He came to preach the gospel. He came to make the gospel possible. Do we share any of that? It might be one thing to be at peace with church friends and you're doing well on that part. But what about being a peacemaker, reaching those who are hostile to God? That's a mark as well. So I think that's really important, because I remember when I became a Christian, I suddenly was concerned about the souls of people around me. I didn't care before. I didn't care about my own soul. are you at least caring about the fact that there are unnumbered souls dying and passing into the night? That's a mark. Maybe for the first time in your life, you've started caring about the souls of people around you. Blessed are you, Jesus says. So, whatever your answer was to this, if it was a yes, yes, I see peacemaking qualities in me, blessed are you, Jesus says. But if maybe you're thinking, it's not looking good, or it's not what it should be, just some things to say. Two things to end on is what you should do. What should you do? If you're sitting there tonight thinking, I don't see much of this in me. First thing is come and receive peace. Let your lack of peacemaking be a sign to come to the peacemaker. If you're not seeing much evidence in you, if you're harsh, if you're selfish, let that drive you to the peacemaker. Where do you go? Where do you meet him? At the cross, the place where peace was made. Believer, do you need to return there to melt again, to be in wonder again, to then look out and think, oh, they need this. Anyone who's never come, do you need to come for the first time and find that peace of God? If you do that, it will flow naturally. I think that's the point of these Beatitudes. One flows into the other and peacemakers over here. So poor in spirit, mourning, it leads there. So go to the cross. You won't be able to maybe to stop peacemaking. look at the likes of Apostle Paul and Isaiah. Here I am, send me, Isaiah says. Paul saying, I'm eager to preach the gospel, Romans 1. You just get the sense that peacemaking flowed naturally out of them. There is a sense it should be natural, but there's a second thing. So firstly, come and receive peace. Secondly, go and make peace. Sounds so obvious, but I think we need to be practical as we bring this to an end. Peacemaking is a doing word. It's not just about working out in your head and I need to be a peacemaker. Just go and do it. ask for God's help. You can't do it alone. And just do it. Maybe tomorrow it simply begins with you holding your tongue. When you're tempted to say something, you go, no, that's gonna make peace. Maybe there's someone in your life waiting for an apology and you refuse to give it. Maybe there's someone in your life where it's silent treatment and no one's saying a thing and you're not going to be the first person and it's hostile in the air. Maybe there's someone who's waiting to hear about Jesus, the greatest peacemaking task. Christians, this is for us. Will we start taking prayerful steps to actually live as the peacemakers that we were called to be? Because blessed are the peacemakers, they shall be called sons of God. So let's sing our final song. Hymn number 821, From Heaven You Came, Helpless Babe. 821.